Okay. I'm going to address a topic which is close to really my heart and maybe many of yours as well, and maybe even some of yours not at all, but the concept of it can be applied beyond the world of sports as well. And that is the Torah's outlook and take on people playing sports, following sports, you know, for the Ben Torah. So first I'll start with a story. There was a Rabbi Moshe Benovitz, who was in charge of the NCY Kollel. A number of years ago, I heard him tell this following story, that the Sima Shas took place in Madison Square Garden two Sima Shas ago. And he was there among the crowd of others who came at the Garden. He also, many times he had been to the Garden for a sport, as a sports fan. But the first time he was there in a religious setting of the Sima Shas. And as he was running to the bathroom towards the end of the Sima, he overheard two security guards talking to each other. One of them said to the other one, "Gosh, I've never seen the guard like that before him." And Benitz is like a big sports fan. He's like shocked. He's like, "What? This guy must have just started working in the Garden. It can't be that, you know, he's the roar of the crowd of a Mania Haitian Rabba could possibly compare to when Patrick Ewing in that shot, you know, to win the game in the playoffs or to lose the game, which they always did in the playoffs. Patrick Ewing was there. So it could possibly have compared to that." So he was shocked. He goes, "The guy, how long have you been working for in the Garden?" The guy says, "I've been working for about 25 years. He says, "I don't understand. I overheard what you said. How could it be? You never heard the Garden as loud as it was tonight?" The guy says, "What are you talking about? I didn't say that. I never heard the Garden as quiet and still when the rabbis were saying their silent prayer. I never heard. Never heard it like that. Start now or no?" Yeah. Good. Great. Great. So the imagery of having like religion be this quiet, silent thing while sports is this big roar. That's the imagery that Rabbi Benovitz had walking out of that stadium. That's fine. I like at the end though, maybe it's changed a little bit about your imagery of sports versus religion in that way. But I'll start with if I can, with reading an article, something I read online today. I sent myself the email about it. So I'll read it to you right now about the role sports plays, not only religion, but in life in general. There's a last time I had Zach Reinhold here, so he was holding a little bit more in the English-British history. But there was a Battle of Waterloo when the English beat the French. And many suggest, it's brought down, and I'll read the quote to you, the Battle of Waterloo was won on the playing fields of Eton, which is a public school that is found in Britain. The British were given to believe the real reason which tipped the balance in their favor in wars was superior character of its young men built in boarding schools while playing games like cricket. They played these games sophisticated, and even goes on to explain. They learned discipline, hierarchy, skills, codes of honor, leadership qualities to help them build and run the British Empire. Sports played a tremendous role in their upbringing, and therefore they felt that in the unselfish acts of playing in a sporting event, an organized team, helped them, in fact, win a war. That's what they believed. And we actually, Americans, are not so far removed from that concept also. Anyone here who's followed, who likes hockey, I don't like hockey, but 1980, the United States of America beat the Russians, the powerhouse Russians, in what we call the Miracle on Ice. That's a famous movie, The Miracle, now they also have. It changed the entire thought and morale of the American people. We're in a Cold War against Russia. They were the powerhouse. We're this Nebuchadnezzar nation in hockey. And these upstarts, these college kids, beat the greatest dynasty in the world of sports at the time. And it changed their whole morale. And if you look, if you watch even in documentaries about it, Kilo had changed the course of American history by a hockey game. So sports has a very, very serious role. How about in religion? So I'll read you right now the Rambam. The Rambam brings down in Hilchos Deos, Perek Gimel, both Halacha, Bet and Gimel. I'll quickly paraphrase. Tzarech Adam, Sheichav and Libo, I'll read one small part of it. Your job in life is to do everything that you can in the world to get to see God better in the world. Everything. Including in that, I'm sitting now way to the bottom. Including in that. When you're sleeping, if you're sleeping because you need a break. Because my brain's fried. I was in a crazy shit this morning. I'm so tired. I need to go to sleep. Or, we'll just replace. I need to play sport. I need to run around and play sport. I want to go jog. I want to work out. I'll play ball today. And you do it so that you will have the ability, as it goes on, k'day, shelo yechaleh, I shouldn't become sick, I shouldn't become too tired. And I can't serve Hashem that way. We find then, says the Rambam, that your sleep, or your ball, your exercise, is in fact a way to serve God. And regarding that, it says, Chacham say everything you should be Shem Shemayim. And according to Pasuk Mishlei, Shlomo Melech himself says, B'chol derechecha de'ehu, you should know God in all of your ways. I mean, even things that are not necessarily particularly Torah related. Well, I'm going to play music in the back of the room over here. So I should do so with a reason of, I need a release. It will help me do better in the afternoon, sir. Then that playing of music, that working out, that taking a jog, that playing ball, becomes part of what is Hashem. You get credit for serving God while you do these things. That's a pretty big deal. Now, Rav Lichtenstein, actually, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, I saw this morning an article he wrote. He says that you have, before you do it, you have to ask why you're doing it and how to do it. So let's talk about sports a little bit. What's the goal of sports? So last time I threw out some possibilities, but it takes too long to go through it, and we're not going to have so much time together today, so I want to tell you some things that we thought about last time, and I wrote down here as well. What's the purpose of sports? Depends. Are you playing it or you're following it? Let's say you're following it. You can bond with someone else who's not like you. You cheer for the same team. There's a certain entertainment value that you have by watching a game. When you play, you get exercise out of it. You get a stress release, perhaps. Or run away from the world that's not around you. You just need a break. There's even breaking down barriers. I don't know if you guys know, but there's a camp that's run for Palestinians and Israelis, a basketball camp that's run. For the purpose of, when you play with ball with someone else, it's not like you, you break down barriers, you're able to bond a little bit together, which is a nice thing. Sports has all these very important values, in which case, we should encourage it. And again, I'm the wrong guy to say this, but I do, you know, for me, I like it also. I like following it, I like playing it. I'm not sure everyone agrees with me right at that point, but if you do it in the right reasons, kol kavod to you, it helps a lot in your general happiness in life. However, there are a number of concerns when it comes to playing sports and following sports. I'll mention four of them. There are probably more than that. Time. How much time does one involve his life with following or playing sports? We'll get back to that in a minute. Emotional connection to the sport. How upset am I when I lose or when my team loses? Behaviors. How do I behave when I'm on the court? Do I have foul mouth? Do I scream at the referees? Am I mean to my teammates? How do I behave when I'm on the court? Sniyut, which is not usually related to men. Usually, sniyut is usually a woman's thing, but it's also men. How do I dress when I play ball? Am I very full of myself? Do I talk about myself a lot when I play ball? These are four elements that in the sports world are very, very dangerous. Now, if you succeed and overcome, we'll get to very soon, these challenges in sporting world is you should play sports. I recommend it. It will help you in life. But if these four things I think that you struggle with, you need to figure out how you're gonna overcome these challenges, because the sporting world will not work with Judaism otherwise. Let's talk about time a little bit. When you're playing ball, so let's say I go to play ball, it can last you for 3-4 hours. That much exercise you don't need. That much break you don't need. There's a lot of time. I imagine watching, let's say, not playing, but following. I'm watching on a Sunday morning. I watch football. You know, I watch my house football. So 1 to 4, and 4:15 to 7:30, then prime time. And then you get, you know, 8, whatever it is, and 8 o'clock game or 8:30 game. You watch 10 hours of television straight. At the end, I used to do, when I was younger, I used to do that. Your head hurts. Oh, my head's killing me. You overdid it. You don't need a stress release for that long. You don't need to entertain yourself for that long. That's already considered beyond the world of appropriate when it comes to the world of appropriate. Only because we care about our time. If your time means nothing to you, because who cares? And you know what? Watch all day long. Who cares? But if you value your life, you value your time, that's considered a violation of your time. You overdid it in that case. In which case, that type of sporting world would be bad. But not only that case. Imagine your team's playing right now, you know what's a game going on, and you feel buzz in your pocket updating you, and you're talking to your friend, or you're in a cheer. How many of us are like, you know, I'm not listening, I'm going to talk to you right now, I'm going to listen to you right now. Or how many of us are like, you know, like, checking over here, you know, a little bit, I have my phone's my desk, my pick up feet and put it back down again. So you don't even give, even if you're not actually watching, you don't give the time of day to the person who's in front of you. It could be a parent to a child. It could be a child to a parent. It could be a spouse to a spouse. It's inappropriate. You're not giving people time, besides the time that your mind is even thinking about it, before the game starts, pre-gaming it, post-game discussions, this, that. The amount of time that goes on in the world of sports is inappropriate. There's even a holiday in America called Super Bowl Sunday, where the pre-game show starts 6 hours before the game. And we're like, yeah, push it. What do you mean? Why not? It's to see that, you know, the parades and with the locker room, what they had for breakfast, and you know, and every possible holiday we could possibly see, and all the keys to the game. You had to watch all that. It takes a long time. And then you have to bet how long the anthem's going to be, the Star-Spangled Banner, and you know, and who's with the coin toss. Sport, when it becomes a part of your life that way, that's already beyond appropriate level of following sports. Many of us in this room, I'm not going to take a show of hands, but I'm sure most of you would probably raise your hands, have stayed up late nights to watch sporting events, especially playoff season. When that staying up means that the next day you don't function properly, that's the definition of someone who is inappropriately addicted to a pastime. When it affects your normal life that you can't function well anymore, that's a problem already. If you find yourself not being able to go to sleep because you're so excited about the game, or when you watch the game all night long, you can't wake up for a minute the next day, and you can't go to shoot the next day, and that's what you're supposed to be doing here, that's what you want to do here, then that means you cross the border from leisurely to inappropriate behaviors regarding the amount that you obsess over sports. To have it in your life, to be able to enjoy it, to entertain by it, call it kavod to. Go for it, enjoy it. But to the extent when it affects your waking hours, that's already beyond what you should be doing. That's already when you have to question whether or not you're doing the right thing. I'll give you a personal story. I'm embarrassed to tell the story to you, but I'll tell you because we're together, all of us. So when I was in Poland, I asked everyone that was with us if they would go to Forest Towers the last day to be makabel something by yourself, to never forget what happened, what we saw, what we experienced, our feelings, our emotions in Poland. So I was makabel myself. I didn't tell anyone, but I'll tell you right now. Makabel myself, a weird thing, and I'm embarrassed I did before him, but I'll tell you right now, I have done it since, is that, you know, many of you, I'm sure, like this also. You wake up in the morning, and, you know, your phone's right cuddled next to your pillow, and peeking what happened in the game last night, or what's going on in the game right now, or, you know, you wake up every half hour and check and sleep again. So I wasn't like that, but I always have the phone next to my bed with my alarm clock. I watch my alarm, I take the phone, I open up, and it's just ESPN refresh. What happened last night? The first thing I wake up to is my neshama is going to be like, you know, see a picture of some athlete on the front page of my phone. Like, that's inappropriate. My neshama just came down from Shemayim. My eyes are like, that? So I decide I'm not doing that anymore. Turn my alarm off. And the first thing I'm going to say, thank you to God for waking me up in the morning. Thank you. Because I can't live my life knowing that the first waking moment of my life is a sports concern that I have. If that's what my life is like, then something is wrong with my value system in sports. Something's wrong with it. You know, I'm embarrassed to tell the story also, but I'll tell. It's not about me this time. It's about you. Not you, anyone you, but the royal you. We had an unbelievable Shabbaton in Rabbi Shemesh this past Shabbos. As you were there, it was unbelievable. And I was on a high until I was driving back home from the shul. I drove some guys home from the shul. And, of course, no one had their phone on, you know, in the shul. They didn't bring the phones. They left the phones at home. And I was talking to one of the boys who I was driving home, and he was telling me something about what fan he is. And I asked him, what's the score in the series? He said to me, it's 2-1. I said, 2-1? I didn't remember playing a third game. When did that happen? I went home, I checked the phone, and my phone, it happened on Friday night. And he knew the score on Shabbos already. So that means one of two things. Either that person would chas v'shalom violate Shabbos to find out a sports score, and I was like so angry, and I found out it wasn't the case in the end, Baruch Hashem. Not worse than that, but really disturbing, is that you plug your phone into some sort of a system, I don't know what the word is for it, but you plug in where it updates you every point scored, every goal scored, every quarter, end of a game, flash on your phone. And it's Shabbos. What's that?
Notification,
thank you. Notifies you when there's a change in the event. You can't wait till after Shabbos, and the phone flashes on Shabbos. Ooh, what you don't look, you don't touch it. Ooh. It's not five, they won. Could you imagine you're in the yichur room with your wife? And your phone, you feel a buzz in your pocket. And she's like, I love you so much. She's like, what, honey, wait. Oh, yes. Up by 2 and 4. Could you imagine how embarrassing that would be to your, and humiliating for your wife? It's Shabbos. Yadavka's supposed to be putting things away. And you set the notification on your phone that it should buzz so that I know, I don't have, God forbid, 16 more hours without knowing what happened in the game. God forbid. I know when you go to America, people have these newspapers, people, they read it on Shabbos, okay? You find out in shul, no matter what. But in Eretz Yisrael, when no one has newspapers, don't come on Shabbos even. And your phone notifies you because you can't wait 16 hours? Something is wrong with your level of following sports if you feel the need to follow that also. Something's wrong. It's not normal behavior. It's inappropriate behavior. That's regarding time. Emotions. People are so connected to their teams. We won! We? What? You were sleeping in your bed last night when that team played. What did you do? No, because I'm a fan, and I support them, and I write letters into their office, and I buy tickets. I have on my wall a banner. We won! You didn't win. Some guys that you don't even know who wore jerseys that has your team's name on it happen to have won. You didn't win at all. We get so happy and so sad at our team's successes and failures. When your day is brightened up or downed by someone else who you never met in the world, who doesn't care about you at all, something's wrong with your level of following sports also. I say this because I also was like that. Mostly not like that anymore. I don't really follow as much anymore. But when your day, your week is affected by someone else you don't know from the whole world, how he played sports, then something is wrong. That's not normal. It shouldn't be that way. You know, the Sports Illustrated has this in the beginning part of it, it has the sign of the apocalypse. You know what I'm talking about, that little piece? So about 20 years ago, there was this ridiculous one that whenever I heard it, I was like, that's the weirdest thing, but maybe you guys would appreciate it, which just makes it even more weird, is that there was when the Rangers won the Stanley Cup after 80-something, 90-something years of not being won in 1994, so there was a guy who had put a two-way speaking system into the grave of his father, and he went over to his side of it and said, "Hey, Dad, we did it. Rangers won the Cup." Sign of the apocalypse. Could you imagine a person's dying wish? "Son, you must tell me when I'm dead, the Rangers finally did it." It's ridiculous, but frankly, we're not that extreme, but we're pretty extreme also. We're pretty fixated. Our happiness rides on our time, amount of thought and discussions. It's a very difficult thing when we have our life that way. That's regarding the time element of it. Behaviorally, the time element, emotional element, behaviorally. So, I'll tell you just two quick opposite examples. I had a student of mine, I don't want to say how long ago it was, but he and I had this big running debate about proper behavior on the basketball court. His taina was that whatever it takes to win. My taina was, you always have your bent over, you can never do anything. The ball goes off, you know, Yaakov and I are fighting for a ball, and it goes off me, and I point, I'm like, off him! So the ref doesn't know. He's trying to figure out himself. I'm lying. I know it's off me. He knows it's off me. The ref doesn't know. Shouldn't I share with him the information? Ref, that's off me. It's one thing if I foul the guy, it's a judgment call. No one knows was I in position or not. I flop. I get that. But to be a liar, you want to be a liar on the basketball court? Because you know why? Because you get an extra possession out of that. Or maybe they call it jump ball. Maybe you get the next jump ball you get now. That's how you want to live your life, where you do anything that you can. You lie. See, Rabbi, it's a game. No, it's not a game. It's part of life. If you're in life, you're used to lying to give yourself an advantage, then where would it stop? Only in the court? I don't think so. Business. You lie about that too. Spousally, family things. You lie about that too. Because you train yourself that if it gives you an advantage in life, you would lie about it. The opposite of Tversky. Romero Tversky, NCY Cole, I told the story to get some of my guys my shirt beforehand. He used to play basketball, not when I was there, but years ago, 10 years ago, he used to play basketball with the Glen Cycle guys. One time he was fouled, and the ref called, "Foul, two shots for Tversky." Tversky says back to him, he says, "I'm sorry." He says, "I wasn't fouled, I can't shoot these shots." And they're like, "Okay, you know, I guess going that way then, what are we going to do?" Can you imagine the level of honesty versus what we do in our lives? When we read to a quote of Lichtenstein, Zichron Levracha, I saw it this morning. I took a picture of my phone so I could read to you. Said about sports. He's not bashing sports, nor am I, by the way. He's just relating to you the dangers of sports. The world of sports is, in a certain sense, trivial. Mature adults are running around trying to put a ball through a hole. Nevertheless, moral qualities can and do come into play. Cooperation, team play, an attempt to get the maximum out of yourself, etc. The inherent effort of the person himself, or the loneliness of the long-distance runner and his isolation are very significant moral elements. While one need not accept the British belief that the Battle of Waterloo was one of the playing fields of Eton, there is no question that within the essentially trivial world of sports, real moral greatness and real moral degradation can be seen. Listen to this last part here. If you see someone on the basketball court who wants only to shoot and score, and defense means nothing to him, that is not simply disturbing to another basketball player, but is morally repugnant. How could you possibly not try your hardest in basketball? You're morally repugnant. That's a very strong statement to make. You think sports is isolated from your life? It's not isolated from your life. If you play the sport right and properly, and you play well, not well, like you do well, means you play it properly the way it's supposed to be played, call it a vote to you. If you play it like an animal, I want the leg up, I want to be one of the one who wins, I'll do anything to win, then what are you doing? Sports is the worst thing for a bent over then. I heard quoted this morning, right over the hill over here, we share a bus stop with Michlala. I'm not saying you guys would like to marry them, but just so you know, Rav Kupperman, who's the in charge of the entire school, said one time, don't look at how the boy is in the base of Medrash. Look how he plays basketball. That's how you can tell if you want to marry someone like that. I told my students, you know, imagine that your father-in-law, your future father-in-law, you're dating some girl. He's watching the game. Would you do that in the middle of the game? Would you scream at the ref? Would you berate a teammate who dropped the ball? You know, would you call off someone else when everyone knows it was off of you? I would never want my daughter to marry a guy like that. Where's the honesty? So if sports pulls honesty away from you and proper behavior, then you shouldn't play sports. But to use it as a break, run around, get excited, call kavod. To the last part, and then I'll stop with this. The amount of passion that you can learn from sports. There's a lot of people question why we learn Gemara. I'm sure many in this room also question. It's not practical. It's not that I don't like it. It's just not I like practical things. So I'll tell you about, I forget what year it was. Maybe it was 4 years ago, 3 years ago. When the Redeem team was playing basketball for the United States Olympics, and they were trying to redeem themselves from having lost in the prior Olympics. So there was a great team of all your favorite, you know, single-named people. LeBron, Kobe, even initials, KD. You know, all the guys, all the chevra. They were all playing together on the same team. There was a big debate. Who would win? The Redeem team or the Dream team? Big machlokas. And everyone wrote about it. And everyone talked about it, myself included. Are you kidding me? I'm from the old days. So I'm like, the Dream team would kill the Redeem team. They're not selfish. They play the way it's supposed to be played. That game's never going to happen. It's 20 years off. And yet, we all talked about it. You know why? Because we like sports. You don't not learn Gemara because it's not practical. It's because you don't have not to like it so much. It's not because, you know, I only want to do things that really are going to happen in the end. ESPN always has these, like, they make you, like, they play have a whole, like, a tournament of, you know, who would win if you play the following people against each other? Who's the greatest athlete? They have, like, Michael Jordan versus, like, you know, Andre Agassi. Not the same sport, but you vote on them. And everyone votes. They have hundreds of people voting on these things. Why? Because they happen to enjoy sports. It will never happen. Michael Jordan playing basketball against Andre Agassi playing tennis. It's not feasible. But the discussion is, and we like sports. We talk about it. When your life is more passionate in the world of sports than it is in the world of God, then we're in big trouble. If sports is an icing on your cake, don't obsess over it. You play ball, you run around, you have a great time, you bond, and you do it the right way, and you're fair, and you're honest. You should play sports because you're an inspiration to everyone around you. But when you're that guy who's it's off of him, and you know, berating people and the referees, and you just want to win, it spills over everywhere in life. And in the end, you know, it's going to be you. It's going to be outside the world. It's going to be you also. It's a very dangerous thing. There was the greatest, and I end with this point, the greatest athletic accomplishment ever, according to Forbes magazine, was, anyone know what it was? What's that? Nope. Roger Bannister. Anyone ever heard of him? Roger Bannister? Ross, you should have heard of him, Ross. Disappointed you. Yeah. He broke the 4-minute mile. He's a runner.
Okay, I saw
it was thought to be physically impossible. Physically, you would die before you broke it. If you got there at the end, you would die up at the finish line when you couldn't break it. It's not possible. And he fought and fought, and he did it in the end. And once he did it, 2 weeks later, two other guys did it also. Now, there's a guy, a Kenyan, 1997, broke the less than 8 minutes, 2 miles. I mean, he did twice. Like that. It was allegedly thought to be an impossible feat. A 4-minute mile. Impossible. You learn from sports that when someone tries, nothing's impossible. We all heard, and I'll end with this point, at the panel this past Shabbos, people who we said, that's impossible. That, 5:15 in the morning, he's a genius. You know, he went and he got in America and he went to Oxford, he got free time. It's impossible. One thing you learn from sports is that no one ever gives up in sports, ever. I was reading the way over here, not because I was doing this show because I like sports. Reggie Miller's famous, you know, 9 points in 8 seconds, I think it was. I think that order, 9 seconds. They had a whole run through about how he did it and what he did and whatever the thing at the time. And the person wrote the game was over at 6 points. I shut it off. It's over. I don't do it anymore. Nothing's impossible. And sports teaches you that. So if you use sports as like as an inspirational thing, you watch the commercials of the guys working harder, and you read an article like a Roger Bannister. And you hear about how you watch Kevin Durant's MVP induction MVP speech, and you see how he thanked every single person, even trainers, for helping him get rewards. Then sports is great. when you play it honestly, when you don't obsess over it, when it's not hours upon hours of your thought and of your day, the Rambam would tell you, I don't know if he tells you, but I'll tell you, the Rambam should say, play it. It's part of your Avodas Hashem. It's part of running around. It's part of enjoying. However, if sports becomes for you obsession, makes you into a person that you don't want, you're not proud of afterwards. You go, you leave the court feeling bad at what you did. Hours upon hours of time, you can't even focus on your friend. In the middle of shiur, you're buzzing, you want to see what's going on. And there's a problem here. Then you borderline on addictive behavior. And in no area of life is that good. Particularly sports. So when it comes to being a Ben Torah, there's a lot of room for sport being in your life. You just have to make sure that you're keeping yourself aware of all the other challenges that come along as well.